From Indiana to Mexico, Du Bois to Waynesburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, controversy has swirled around the Public School Employees Retirement System, or PSERS, for the past few years. State Representative Frank Ryan, who sits on the PSERS board, is here with an update. 2020 was a disaster for the hospitality industry, and tax revenue from that sector took a big hit. On this week's Allegheny Institute report, Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi take a look at how the numbers improved in 2021. And Americans for Prosperity has released its 2022 federal policy agenda, which has the goal of reimagining the role of government. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Frank Ryan in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania has a new congressional district map, and once again, it has been put into place by judicial fiat rather than through the constitutional process that gives that power to the legislature. Lawmakers and Governor Tom Wolf did not agree on a new map, so the task ended up before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which has a history of making highly partisan and politically motivated decisions. So to the surprise of no one, the Democratic justices once again selected a congressional district map drawn by a California college professor. Lawyers for Democratic plaintiffs had argued in favor of the map, which was ultimately chosen by the Democratic justices. The new map eliminates one congressional district by combining two GOP congressmen into the same district. It otherwise closely resembles a similarly gerrymandered map ordered into place by the state Supreme Court in 2018. The new maps are now in effect for the upcoming May 17th primary election. The state's Education Improvement Tax Credit, EITC, and Opportunity Scholarship Tax Programs, which provide about $30 million in tuition assistance for families seeking education options for their children outside of the government school system, has proven to be highly popular. This according to a recent report published by the Commonwealth Foundation. The report concluded that the limited amount of funding has resulted in more applicants for assistance being denied than approved. As might be expected, there was a significant increase in demand for alternative education during the COVID-19 pandemic, as many parents focused on what is actually being taught in public schools. The Commonwealth Foundation is advocating an automatic escalator clause be added to those programs, so funding will increase each year to catch up with demand. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Questions about the investment policies at the Public School Employees Retirement System, or PSERS, resulted in an internal investigation that has now been completed. State Representative Frank Ryan of Lebanon County is a legislative member of the PSERS board. He serves as vice chairman of that board. He is here to explain the role of PSERS, what went wrong, and the steps taken to correct the problems. Frank, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Frank, before we start talking about the specific problems that have confronted PSERS and some of the steps that have been taken to bring about some reform, tell us what PSERS stands for, what is it, and what is it supposed to do?
It's the Public School Employee Retirement System, and it's PSERS, and we pronounce it PSERS. And it manages the investment funds that are contributed by the teachers, by the school districts, by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And candidly, anyone who owns property is paying into this fund to provide for the retirement fund for the teachers and those workers who work in the public school system, to include support staff, superintendents, and things of that nature. And it's a pretty comprehensive plan. Right now, the assets are over $70 billion. And I'm the legislative member appointed by the Speaker of the House. And I've been on the PSERS board since June of 2019.
Can you give us an overview? There has been a lot of controversy involving PSERS about its investment policies, even about some of the folks who have been involved in making decisions relative to investments. Can you give us just an overview as to what the nature of the recent controversies have been?
First of all, the people at Pacers are really decent people. I've been working with them very actively. As I said, I'm the legislative member, but I'm additionally the vice chair of the board and the chair of the audit committee. And I have been spending a great deal of time as a result of working with predominantly the treasurer and the secretary of banking and some other members of the board and helping to restructure the portfolio. So some of the things I would tell you that are really important is the public school employee retirement system investment portfolio is pretty complicated. And that's neither negative or positive, but it's just pretty complicated. And because of that, what we wanted to do is see as a board if we could find a way to streamline it, reduce the costs annually of all the management fees and the fees paid to Wall Street and things of that nature, which we've done. But most recently, there was a controversy that came up where we had a shared risk calculation. And for many people, as soon as I use these kind of terms, their eyes start to glaze over. But I would ask people to bear with me because it's really important. If the pension fund didn't do as well as it should have based upon its targets, the legislation was passed a number of years ago, which said that they would increase the amount of fees that would be paid by a certain category of teachers, which is basically 0.5% in this particular case. If the fund really outperformed the index, then there was the ability to reduce the amount of funds paid by that one group of teachers by as much as 50 basis points or 0.5%. And under some very isolated circumstances, if it was a disaster or a grand slam, it had the ability to do it by 0.75%. The risk shared calculation was calculated and we had to certify it. And myself and two other board members questioned whether or not a thorough enough audit had been done of that particular number because it was really close to the benchmark. So we questioned it and nothing happened for a little bit. The rate was certified, but then about 45 days later, it was determined that the rate was incorrect and that the three of us, in fact, had reason to be concerned about the rate that was certified. And it all of a sudden, it's called kicked in shared risk, which means we had to increase the amount of contribution from this category of employees, which is about 110,000 people. When all of that happened, then we convened an internal investigation that I was put in charge of as chair of the audit committee to determine what happened. And shortly after the internal investigation got begun, the Department of Justice gave a subpoena asking for the information on this certain type of calculation. It was done to determine what happened. They allowed us to complete our internal investigation that was done by a group of attorneys, and they did a phenomenal job on it. So we completed that and provided that information to the Department of Justice. And what also happened is the Department of Justice also indicated they wanted to look at certain transactions that took place in Harrisburg. We released the report towards the end of January, and we made the entire report public. And as a result of that, that information then became available for people that people are now digesting and asking us a whole series of questions.
The end result of the report, Frank, was there was no finding of malintent or criminality, but simply a miscalculation?
Absolutely. In fact, the information has been presented now to the Department of Justice, who will have to make the final determination of what they want to do, is that we didn't identify, based upon the investigation was done and with the information we had available, we didn't find any evidence of any criminal intent. We found that it was candidly an error by one of the consultants that was used to help develop the shared risk calculation. However, and the same thing happened on the real estate side, we found that there was no evidence of any criminal aspects to the information whatsoever. And again, that's being presented to the Department of Justice. But I have to tell people, and one thing that's really important, we found an awful lot of areas where we have to improve our system of internal controls. And that's something that has been at the top of my list for the entire Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. About 2 years ago, I was written a bill on governance, which allowed for a type of an audit of the internal control systems of the two pension systems, the SERS system, which is the State Employees Retirement System, and the PESRS, public school employee retirement system. And what they would do is evaluate the system of internal controls to make sure this kind of stuff doesn't happen. And I was very proud to say that I was the author of that part of that legislation. And that's going into effect as we speak. Had that been in effect at the time that this rate was calculated, it wouldn't have happened. Additionally, the other thing that we're trying to do, and I've been working on diligently, as you know, is what's currently called House Bill 117, the Auditor General Fraud and Forensic Bill, which would give our Auditor General the ability to conduct some of these types of investigations themselves without us having to outsource it to other entities, which can be fairly expensive in the process. So we're still working actively through that. But we were very pleased to see that we've got a whole series of controls that we've already bought in December of 2021. The board voted to streamline the portfolio, and we'll start to make that type of transition to make it a little bit less complicated. We'll start to reduce the management fees. And as I said, I really want to emphasize, we have a really good team of professionals at the system across the board who have been going through a tremendous amount of stress by this entire investigation that's taken place. If there's any one thing I would hope that the public would realize is we all have a vested interest in this. We should all want to make sure it's good returns, because 20% of all of your property tax bills on average in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania are used to pay unfunded school property taxes for the pension system. And so it's a big number. So you could basically say 20% of your property tax goes to pay somebody else's pension. And I think it's really incumbent upon everybody to make sure that we have tremendously tight controls in place to make sure that the funds are invested wisely, have an outstanding rate of return commensurate with the risk that we're taking, so we can reduce the expense and exposure to the taxpayer while at the same time protecting the annuitants of the system, which is the primary objective of the pension system, is to protect the annuitants.
We are talking with State Representative Frank Ryan. He is a board member of the Public School Employees Retirement System, talking about a recently completed investigation. And Frank, you mentioned how complicated this investment process is. And of course, you're talking about billions of dollars, so it's obviously complicated. It's made even more so by something called the ESG standards. What in the world does ESG stand for, and how do they affect the various investment decisions that the board must make?
ESG is a standard that stands for environmental, social, and governance standards. And it's been around for a while. And conceptually, when it got started, was designed to ensure that the organization was well enough run to make sure that you had traditional change of control type plans, continuity plans, transition plans when a CEO would leave, as an example with Microsoft, when Bill Gates left, did you have properly transitioned when Steve Jobs was ill? Did they have a proper transition to make sure that the organization's not left in a lurch? And so ESG was a really sound concept about business governance. Unfortunately, lately, it's become morphed into a very serious woke social agenda. So let me give you an example. If a pension system anywhere, and this is not happening in Pennsylvania, but just conceptually, if it were to happen, and all of a sudden you had an investment in the apartment complexes and someone was not able to make their monthly rent, some people using ESG standards would say it would be wrong to evict anybody. And the problem with that is that you can't make an investment in something and then not collect the rent, or the taxpayers have to pay more and the annuitants get really hurt.
Again, we have been talking with State Representative Frank Ryan of Lebanon County. He serves as a member of the board, vice chairman of the board of the Public School Employees Retirement System. Frank, if we have listeners who would like to learn more, can you give us your legislative website so folks will know how to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. It's RepFrankRyan.com. And our email is fryan@pahousegop.com, and I'd love to hear from you.
State Representative Frank Ryan. Frank, thank you for being here.
Roman, thank you very much. It's always good to speak with you.
The hospitality industry came to a standstill for much of 2020 and began to recover last year. What impact has that disruption had on hotel tax collections? Here with the answer are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi with an Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Amrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. Recently, you did another brief on hotel tax collections in Allegheny County and how they fared versus 2019, because obviously everybody knows that 2020 was a bit of a crapper for the hospitality industry. So could you please give our listeners a little update on your research?
The 2021 collections of the hotel tax came in at just about $25 million. It's still down from 2019, brought in the $37 million range. And as you mentioned, 2020 was really bad. That tax bottomed out, and the total collections for 2020 were just a little over $15 million.
For our listeners, what is the hotel tax rate in Allegheny County, and what is its purpose?
The rate is 7%. It's actually composed of two pieces. Originally, there was a 5% hotel tax, and then in 1997, the General Assembly authorized an additional 2% levy. Together at 7%, basically what the tax does is it pays the debt of the David L. Lawrence Convention Center. There were bonds that were sold to construction of that facility. It pays for tourism promotion. It pays Allegheny County for collecting and administering the tax, and a small share of the tax goes to a municipality in the eastern suburbs, the municipality of Monroeville, which also has hotels and has a convention center itself. It gets to keep a small portion of the tax generated within Monroeville for its own tourism purposes.
You mentioned how bad 2020 was. 2019 was a very good year for these collections. How does it compare to the most recent data in 2021?
2019, there was just about $38 million that was raised from the tax. As we mentioned, 2021 climbing a little bit higher than 2020, but still not back to 2019. Some of the projections that the county has put together in its budgets, where it looks, maybe like a 5-year forecast pre-COVID, the tax was expected still to be in the mid $30 million range annually. And it fell, and now it's starting to climb. I think by 2025, county does project as of now that they think the tax should be probably back in that $30 million range.
Now, obviously, this is not just an Allegheny County issue. This hotel tax is something that's legally granted them by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So the state has given the counties the option to do this, and Allegheny County has taken advantage of it, as I'm sure Philadelphia County has as well. But you also noted in the research that Philadelphia County has something else, an improvement district, and there may be a proposal in the General Assembly to extend that to other places?
It sort of sounds like it's a way to raise the hotel tax without directly raising the hotel tax. State law permits municipalities to create what's called neighborhood improvement districts. And that is a specifically designated area where there's a nonprofit that's created. Businesses have to approve the improvements and the nonprofit, who's on the board and whatnot. And typically there's a special assessment that comes along with it. And that's basically what you think of. Like, the businesses are taxing themselves in order to pay for sidewalk improvements, pay for streetscape, facade. This proposal that's in the General Assembly basically would allow counties of the second class to approve of neighborhood improvement districts. So that's the first change. Is currently, counties can't create improvement districts. This would allow Allegheny County to do so. If it did, there's a way where the county could designate an improvement district that could be countywide, and that would only affect hotels. Now, you mentioned Philadelphia. Philadelphia being a city of the first class, it's not governed by the Neighborhood Improvement District Act the way that other municipalities are. It's governed by a 1998 act. The city of Philadelphia did this. They created an improvement district that encompasses the entire city of Philadelphia, and then what they call the benefited properties under the improvement district are hotels that have 50 or more rooms. And what those hotels of 50 or more rooms do is that they put on a hotel tax bill a special assessment. It's called the Hospitality Improvement Levy, and that is 3/4 of 1% that appears on hotel tax bills. This is something that did get a hearing here in Allegheny County in the fall where the tourism community said, we would like to have this. This is something that would expand our reach. It could help hotels as they recover from the pandemic. That seems like a really counterproductive way to do it. I mean, charging people more, want them to come here and stay. As we mentioned, we already have a 7% hotel tax. And I think the important aspect about that is under state law, the 2% that I mentioned that came on in 1997, that's supposed to expire the earlier of 2027 or when the convention center bonds are paid off that are supported by the tax. And that would leave you with a 5% tax, which that would be at the same rate as the neighboring counties. For all the other counties of the other classes were permitted to levy an excise tax of up to 5% by a 2016 state law. So I think the better way to go with it at that point is not to do this improvement district, to then let the 2% tax expire, and then you're left with this 5% tax, and then the General Assembly would decide how it gets divvied up at that point.
I think one of the funny, and not ha-ha funny, but more the ironic funny things that you bring up in the piece is the whole reason that we built a new convention center, that we had the Regional Renaissance Initiative, was to build these stadiums to draw people into the city to increase hotel stays. And here we are 20, almost 30 years later, and it's still not generating enough money. So with the neighborhood improvement districts being imposed, who might benefit from it?
Well, one of the parties that's listed in the proposed legislation is the Sports and Exhibition Authority. Now, they own the convention center, they own the two stadiums, and they own the arena. A few years ago, they went to the Regional Asset District, which administers the 1% local option sales tax, and asked for an allocation from them. So they've gotten $800,000. With the exception of 1 year, they got $760,000 when COVID affected the sales tax receipts. And they've gotten that money basically to pay for maintenance and upkeep of the facilities. But now, under this, if this assessment would come to pass under the Neighborhood Improvement District, they would also get some unspecified percentage from that.
Wow, that's interesting. I'd like to thank my colleague Eric for joining me today. I would like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about this or any of our other topics, I invite you to visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org. Thank you very much for listening.
Reimagining the role of the federal government. That is the goal of Americans for Prosperity's policy agenda for 2022. For details, we turn to Ashley Klingensmith and this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Americans for Prosperity has released our 2022 Federal Policy Agenda, which is a roadmap for reimagining the role of government and empowering people to create a stronger and more prosperous future. Mounting inflation, supply chain gridlock, and labor shortages have exacerbated the ongoing battle to defeat COVID and find a new sense of normal. Today, we'll discuss the first and second of five key priorities that we believe will help unlock America's potential by reimagining the role of government and empowering people to seize the moment and drive progress. First, we need to build a thriving economy. This is achieved when unnecessary barriers are removed and free people are empowered to solve the challenges they see in their communities and across the country. That means lower burdens of taxes and debt, a free labor market that offers opportunity and flexibility, and an inclusive process to ensure government services are providing the value Americans deserve. To that end, there are three key principles we should commit to today. Congress should fund the government's core competencies with the least burdensome sources of revenue, not by piling debt on future generations. Workers should be free to seek employment opportunities that use their unique skills to contribute to society, and businesses should have the flexibility to offer choices to diverse potential workers and clients. And Congress needs, but does not have, coherent and inclusive budget and policy processes to equip lawmakers to effectively adjust priorities, evaluate trade-offs, and ensure the taxpayer resources finance the most valuable services for the American people. policy solutions that promote a tax system that expands opportunity, that gets people back to work and meets consumer supply chain needs in the changing economy, and fixing the broken budget system are all necessary to achieve a thriving economy. And second, we need to restore Congress's policymaking leadership. Today, the executive branch is instituting one of the most aggressive expansions of the administrative state in history. This approach effectively removes accountability and bypasses the will of the people by taking their elected representatives out of the equation, taking power away from Congress and their constituents, and moving it to unelected administrative agencies and bureaucrats. Our country deserves more accountability and more transparency in the policymaking process, and there are several major opportunities for Congress to reassert its policymaking role in 2022. Congress should take back its Article I constitutional authority and support policies to reform our regulatory system. We need to resist top-down environmental and climate regulations that constrain consumer choice. We need to remove barriers to housing and land use that drive up costs and slow economic mobility. Next time, we'll discuss the final three priorities that will help America emerge stronger: a personal option for healthcare, ending the failed approach to addiction and substance use, and strengthening and modernizing our immigration system. You know, much of Washington is completely disconnected from the real challenges facing American families and businesses: runaway inflation, major workforce and supply chain issues, missteps in addressing some of the most predictable elements of the pandemic, and a hopelessly broken immigration and border security system. We look forward to working with our congressional delegation in the Commonwealth to gain additional co-sponsors for the legislation that helps advance many of the above-said policy solutions, and we anticipate and look forward to your continued partnership as engaged citizens in the public policy process. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just over a month away. The premier annual grassroots conservative event will be held April 1st and 2nd at the Penn Harris Hotel in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Fox News host, former Congressman Trey Gowdy. Former Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin will be the kickoff speaker. The conference will include forums spotlighting candidates for governor of Pennsylvania and U.S. Senator. An added feature this year is a pre-conference election integrity summit to be held on Thursday, March 31st. As always, there will be speakers, panel presentations, and workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.